God's most holy word in the Old Testament in the prophecy of Daniel. The prophecy of Daniel after the long ones, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. We come to Daniel and we are going to read the rather long second chapter of Daniel this morning. This is a long reading, but a fascinating one. Daniel chapter 2. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar, the king emperor of Babylon, had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." Then the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream and we will interpret it." Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there is just one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There is not a man on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among men." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death amongst them. When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, "Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?" Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went in to the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, "Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He sets up kings and deposes them. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, O God of my fathers. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king." Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret his dream for him." Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means." And the king asked Daniel, also called Belteshazzar, was the name that he had given him, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. Your dream and the visions that pass through your mind as you lay on your bed are these. As you were lying there, O king, your mind turned to things to come, and the revealer of mysteries showed you what is going to happen. As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have greater wisdom than other living men, but so that you, O king, may know the interpretation, that you may understand what went through your mind. You looked, O king, and there before you stood a large statue image, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance. The head of the statue was made of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of baked clay. While you were watching, a rock was cut out, but not by human hands. It struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and smashed it. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were broken to pieces at the same time and became, notice the same time, the purpose of God, and became like chaff on a threshing floor in the summer, which of course is blown away. The wind swept them away without leaving a trace. But the rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. This was the dream, and now we will interpret it to the king. You, O king, are the King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory in your hands. These two verses are vitally important. Two of the most important verses in the Old Testament, because they indicate that the supremacy and dominion of the earth was taken away from Israel because of her sins and her being taken into captivity to Babylon, and was given, the supremacy amongst the nations was given to this pagan Emperor Nebuchadnezzar. You, O king, are the King of Kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds of the air. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. You are that head of gold. After you, another kingdom will arise, inferior to yours, the Medo-Persian. Next, a third kingdom, one of bronze, will rule over the whole earth. That's the Greek kingdom, Alexander the Great. Finally, there will be the fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire, strong as iron, for iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so it will crush and break all the others. just as you saw that the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so this will be a divided kingdom. Yet it will have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes were partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people of the Roman Empire will be a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. This is the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of the mountain, but not by human hands. This is the rock of ages. Christ Jesus, of course, a rock that broke the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true and the interpretation is trustworthy. Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. The king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery." Then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all its wise men. Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court. Amen. May God bless to us his holy word. The Old Testament, the book of Daniel, chapter 2. Last Sunday morning I gave three very round dates to compare Daniel with Nehemiah, which we had just studied. The first date was 600 B.C. and the next 500 B.C. in the next 400 B.C. Actually, for our study this morning, the date is 605 B.C. That is the accurate date, and a very significant date in Old Testament history, because that was the year that Nebuchadnezzar defeated Egypt and ended the Assyrian kingdom at Carchemish on the Euphrates. He seized practically universal power, as we see from verses 37 and 38 of our chapter, and carried away the first Jews to Babylon, including Daniel, that year 605. All these things happened. The great battle of Carchemish, when the Assyrian kingdom that had ruled and reigned so long was demolished, and Egypt was vanquished, and Babylon was in control. Nebuchadnezzar, go on then, Nebuchadnezzar would then have regarded himself as monarch of all he surveyed. But of course that didn't last long for more than one reason. particularly for his own personal problems, began to cause the king extreme satisfaction. We do not escape the troubles of earth by sitting on a throne. There was a God in heaven far above Nebuchadnezzar. But he didn't know that yet. And his dream troubled him so that he couldn't sleep. So he sent for his wise men, traditionally the wisest men of the ancient world, but he wanted them to tell him his disturbing dream, which of course shows the extreme irrationality of an absolute monarch who delights in demanding the impossible of his servants, with dire consequences for them if they cannot comply. There's no reason here, just unlimited power, like the extreme Islamic sects today within their realms, and abroad too if they could manage it, who think they'll rule the world. But no. Already, like the Marxists, the Islamic world, is learning a lesson or two on the fact that false doctrine doesn't work. It certainly doesn't work out to the benefit and advantage of those who hold it. Only godly doctrine works, as those who cherish the Bible and live by its precepts know very well. What a blessing to know that, and to live by it, isn't it? So Nebuchadnezzar, being himself the only God he really knew, and all mankind, or practically all mankind under him, would simply sweep away all the magicians, the astrologers, and the learned men of his generation because they could not do the impossible. What he would do after he had liquidated them all and there were no more wise men in his realm, we don't know. Perhaps he hadn't considered that, the rash fellow that he was. It was enough for him in the meantime that, being frustrated by these magi, these magicians, in his impossible demand on them, he should wipe them all out. He would have to think of something else after that to relieve his tortured mind. But I doubt he hadn't considered that. However, as we saw in chapter 1, there were those on the earth who lived far above Nebuchadnezzar's hegemony, his headship, in the world of Jehovah, Yahweh, the Lord, who, being believers in the true God, did not kowtow to all that even great Nebuchadnezzar said, but dared to question him, as Daniel did, you remember, in the matter of food. So in the matter of submitting to instant execution, Daniel said no. He didn't believe it was God's will that they should be liquidated. They had been sent to Babylon for a purpose. He believed that. So, when the king's flunkies came looking for Daniel and his friends to liquidate them, although Daniel and his friends had had no part in the magician's failure, they didn't get the chance. Daniel said, "Wait a minute, flunky. What's this?" And when the man explained, Daniel went to see the king. "Give me time, O king," which the king, already impressed with the acquisition of these Hebrews to his household, gave him time. So off went Daniel to his friends. Prayer, boys, prayer. That's the drill. And so, in the night, lots of things happen in the night. We can't sleep forever. God revealed to Daniel the dream and its interpretation. Hence this wonderful psalm. It's one of the finest of the psalms, so short and contains so much. Wish we could sing it. I wonder, Drew, it was ever set to music. One of the finest psalms. So, Daniel sent Arioch to the king to say, "Don't execute these men. I will expound and interpret the dream." But this is the intriguing thing. I think the scriptures are so fascinating. Why don't people read them more? When the king asked Daniel if he could interpret his dream, he said, no. And before the end of Daniel's first sentence, you could imagine Nebuchadnezzar's bursts. That's Scots for bristles. Rose. No? Then what on earth are you doing here? Wait a minute, king, wait a minute. Let me finish my sentence. I know someone who can tell you your dream and interpret it. Who? There's a God in heaven reveals mysteries, O king, and he has shown me what your dream was and what it means. Ah, light at last. So the king was all ears. And so Daniel began. Something was being told you in your dream, O king, and God has shown it to me, that you may learn what the dream means. You saw a huge, awesome statue with a head of pure gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, with legs of iron and feet partly iron, partly clay. And while you were looking, a hewn-out rock appeared and struck the image on its legs and smashed it to such rubble and powder that it disappeared off the face of the earth. But the rock grew and filled the earth. That's what you saw, O king, wasn't it? And the king must have been thinking, Belteshazzar, you know your stuff, don't you? But now, what did it all mean? This is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Verses 37 and 38 are two of the most strategic verses in the Old Testament, when you know Old Testament history. And the truth, you see, underlying them is simply that Israel's supremacy as a nation, bestowed on her by God from David's day, she has lost by her sin, and it's given to this heathen emperor. God's ways are mysterious. They're wonderful. They're far beyond our understanding. the supremacy of the nations is given to this pagan emperor. Nebuchadnezzar was now king of kings in place of Jerusalem's last surviving monarch, now a captive, or soon to be a captive, in Babylon. And these were the words Daniel gave to the king. You, O king, are the king of kings and the earth. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he has placed mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds of the air. Wherever they live, he has made you ruler over them all. Well, yes, Daniel, but what else? I am the head of gold. Yes, but what about the rest of the body? That was less welcome news for the king when he understood what the dream meant. And this was where the awful truth that the king obviously dreaded became clear. After you, Nebuchadnezzar, for you are not immortal, for all your power, your power is for a day, O king. You better see what you can make of it while it lasts. After you will succeed a procession of empires and emperors, which Bible students, of course, know well. Following Babylonia, which of course was preceded, as we were saying, by Assyria, following Babylonia, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. But, and this is the fascinating thing, all the time these empires are rising and swallowing each other for roundly 1,000 years. And the last one, the Roman one, beginning to crumble. Something else is happening in the world. Amazing. Amazing. You see that the text said that the whole thing was to be smashed at the same time. That is simply an indication that God knew what he would do, and in his mind all these false empires that were raised because of Israel's sin will one day be destroyed. Now you need to understand that none of these great heathen empires would ever have gained ascendancy in the world. Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece and Rome, if Israel had not sinned and sinned away her supremacy. It's a terrible thing that God's chosen people did, isn't it? Who would have thought that 70 years after Babylonian captivity would end, Cyrus would send the Jews home in an amazingly expansive gesture? And who would have thought, bringing it up to date, who would have thought that after 70 years of Soviet communism, the whole terrible mistake would be practically discarded in a year or two? You see, you may be sure that when things are going very wrong in God's universe, and we wonder what he's thinking, he's busy silently planning up there in heaven, he's planning reprisals. and purposes of radical recovery of his own people, silently planning in love, we used to say. In the time of those kings, says Daniel, and this is the heart of the matter, in the time of those kings, all the time that these Assyrians and Babylonians and Persians and Greeks, Alexander the Great, and the Romans or the Caesars are reigning, God is working behind the scenes and no one sees it but himself. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And of course we all know what kingdom that is. It is the kingdom of the Lord Jesus Christ. But see how almost impossibly contradictory that statement is. For during the procession of these kings and empires, from Nebuchadnezzar right through to Herod and Caesar, the kingdom of Israel progressively declined until she was ultimately but a bedraggled remnant of her former self, with her royal house reduced to highland peasantry. Joseph, the husband of Mary, was the legitimate heir of the throne of Israel. Did you know that? But he a village carpenter. That's how low Israel, God's supreme nation on the earth, had sunk. How was the God of heaven to set up a kingdom which would never be destroyed during those checkered centuries? By that eternal one, Messiah, whom the prophets foresaw. And sometimes notice, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the rest, whom the prophets foresaw and sometimes spoke of as if present there and then, or coming, the stone cut out of the living rock without hands, is working all the time silently through these centuries. But you might say, how can you say he was there before his human birth? Is that a difficulty with you? Do you remember what Paul said about Israel wandering in the desert, being under a cloud and passing through the Red Sea and being baptized into Moses, as he puts it? They all ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them. And that rock, this is the wilderness, this is Israel in the wilderness, more than 1,000 years before Christ came, and that rock was Christ. The pre-incarnate Jesus Christ is eternal. Was with the Father from the beginning, as we know. But what was the pre-incarnate Christ doing invisibly during those ghastly centuries of progressive Jewish decline? He was hiddenly, secretly smashing these successive kingdoms represented by the body parts of this image. And he was doing so in order that the everlasting kingdom, his kingdom, should emerge, the kingdom that would never pass away. Of course, that's it as we see it now in the fullness of time. But even as Daniel unfolded it to the king, it made such sense to the king that in absolute awe, Nebuchadnezzar fell down before Daniel and practically worshipped him. And not much wonder. what a tour de force Daniel's exposition was. And yet, to know the dream and to interpret it was, when you think of it, and I relate this to what I was saying to the children earlier, to know the dream and to interpret it, when you think of it, was perfectly simple. Who had given Nebuchadnezzar the dream in the first place? It was God. It wasn't Satan, was it? So, only God could make it known to Daniel and give its interpretation. Life is so simple. Do you see that? Life is so simple. When we relate everything to the God who knows and controls everything, evil as well as good, is that not simple? Is God not simple and clear? Why then should we ever become complicated? I believe the complications of our lives are not divine complications at all, except when we are trying to unravel our own sinful complications. Because you see, God always sees things right through to the end. And that makes for simplicity, doesn't it? There are no clouds. No shadows are lurking dangers with him. He sees through them all. What does the word say? The darkness and the light are all alike to thee. Isn't that great? The darkness and the light are all alike to thee. I could believe, you know, that Daniel in his secret heart was highly diverted, if not indeed amused by Nebuchadnezzar. Not contemptuously amused, but kindly amused. You remember Peter, when Cornelius fell at his feet after Peter had brought the gospel to them and the Holy Spirit came down upon the company. Peter said, "Stand up, Cornelius, I'm only a man myself, don't worship me." And also you remember when the people of Lystra saw Paul commanding a cripple from birth to stand on his feet, and he did so, they shouted, "The gods have come down to us in human form," and Paul had to stop them sacrificing bullocks to them. We know that there ought to be no difficulty whatsoever about the most astonishing miracles when they occur, such as the miracles of transforming the political scene throughout the world today. I was speaking about 70 years of prayer against atheistic communism. But you see, the solid prayers of the Christian church worldwide re the greater threat of militant Islam seem to be yielding massive results, and quickly, concerning that world threat. Do you not think so? Fanatics may remain, of course they will, but Iraq and Syria, Libya and the Palestinians are far from getting things all their own way, as they thought they would a year or two ago. They haven't even got Salman Rushdie killed yet, and I hope they never will. But maybe Terry Waite has done us a far greater service praying in his prison cell than he could ever have done at large. Do we not see something of his influence on John McCarthy? What do you think? The divinely cut stone is doing a powerful lot of smashing these days. Tell Fidel Castro that. And of all things, That should drive the Christian church to its knees. The sad fact is we don't know our strength and our power and our influence with God. Daniel knew. He knew. And he was just a willing instrument. And if Daniel had natural gifts, which he undoubtedly had to a superlative degree, it was none of those natural gifts which occupied his mind in dealing with the king. I'm just a message boy, O king. Get up on your feet and act like the king more becomingly. And believe, O king. But you might think, may striplings speak to men of consequence like that? Why not? Why not, when they do so humbly and charmingly? One of our prayers should be that young men in the ministry today would show sufficient command of local situations to be fully faithful to God out of humble, loving hearts. I think some of our men are far too timid. I think of one evangelical who waited 14 years to start a prayer meeting in his congregation lest he should offend anyone. Eventually, he left, and it was never started. I remember John Smith used to say to me, as he neared, he was our session clerk, as he neared the time for his licensing and ordination to the holy ministry, John often said to me, Mr. Still, I'll never have the courage to speak out as you do. I said, nonsense, John. God will give you the courage. No, he said. He didn't think so. And in his first days at Kelton, after the weakening effects on an evangelical of much college teaching, not all of it, but much of it, and I can vouch for that, I'm sure John Smith pulled his punches with the greatest care in order to behave with impeccable restraint before a worldly congregation. But as John went on at Kelton, the Lord drew forth from his heart and mind and his mouth increasingly strong words of gospel challenge. And he couldn't hold them in and admitted it. And it fair astonished and yet delighted him. Then, of course, some were put off. But it was through that flaming ministry of John Smith's later years in Kelton that Willie McKee was converted, who for years has been a lay preacher and an honest broker of the gospel in that whole area. And that was John's preparation for the work done at Carentyne, Glasgow, and especially at Gairloch. Why, the glow of John Smith's ministry at Gairloch still shines radiantly there, years after dear John has gone to glory. What will we read in the last chapter of Daniel? They that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness shall shine as the stars forever and ever in a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. And here Bishop Henry Alford, the ancestor of our beloved brother Charles, who studies with us here. Bishop Henry Alford says it all in this wonderful hymn, number 222.